Hey, Justin, you want to watch a movie?
Yeah, sure. What you got?
What do you think about,
No, I saw it last week.
Oh, what about,
Not again.
Oh. How about this?
Wait. You want me to watch what?
So, Justin, what did you think of Enter the Dragon?
Insert overly expressive Bruce Lee face here.
All right. For those of you who are just joining, willkommen. Welcome to You Want Me to Watch What? Podcast, where Justin and I, who have seen between the two of us thousands of movies, recommend things that the other just missed
yep.
for whatever reason. And boy, we've had some doozies, things that have been really surprising for both of us.
Yes. Yes, so, we have.
And this month, you saw Enter the Dragon, the 1973 Bruce Lee film. It was his last completed movie.
Yeah.
There was one more that came out after, like 5 years after he died.
Mm-hmm. If my information is correct, he had started filming and done a lot of work on, but hadn't completed. So they did some editing jiggery pokery and made a movie.
They did. This one, though, is all him. His first big budget, and by big budget, we're talking like $800,000. fun fact, brought in $90
million. Damn.
So, a modest success. But according to legend, he was so nervous about it that he didn't show up for filming the first couple of days. And made excuses for why he couldn't come in. And they filmed stuff without him for a while. And then they're like, look, man, you're either here or there's no movie.
Yeah.
So, Enter the Dragon, a four-act structure movie, which I think is interesting. If you were to dissect this, it really comes down to like eight parts split up into four acts.
Mm-hmm.
So, Act 1, Scene 1, for lack of a better term, we see Bruce Lee playing Lee, a pretty highly proficient martial artist, it seems, an instructor. And he's fighting Sammo Hung in an uncredited appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And soundly beating him. But this is our setup. You know, we get to see Lee as the skilled fighter, his philosophy a little bit behind martial arts, you know, and that he is basically being requested to do this mission. There is this bad guy, Han, and Han is having a martial arts tournament. We think he's doing bad stuff. We need somebody to go in and find out. Act 1, Scene 1. That's that. You know, he agrees. Part 2. He learns that, this Han guy, we're setting up the motivation,
mm-hmm.
right? This Han guy, his number one, basically led to Lee's sister's death. You know,
yes.
Messing with him, going to attack her, do bad things, and she commits suicide rather than submit. It is not shown, but it is still pretty intense.
Yes.
So that's that. Part 2, we get the motivations and we get onto the boat.
Mm-hmm.
I love the old boat scenes. I guess we also get the backgrounds of our two other heroes, Roper and Williams.
Yep.
Played by, and I'm going to, okay, it was Jim Kelly and John Saxon.
Mm-hmm.
John Saxon was actually a martial artist. I had no clue.
I didn't either. I started the movie. I'm like, what is the dad from Nightmare on Elm Street doing here? And then I'm looking him up. Okay.
And it's like, yeah, by the time this movie came out, he'd been doing martial arts for like 16 years.
Yeah.
So, But we're going to come back to these three heroes in a little bit.
Yes.
Because we're going to have to talk about their inclusion and what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
But we find out, you know, Roper's a skilled fighter and gambler. That's John Saxon's character. And Williams is a...
Well, he's a skilled fighter. He's not a skilled gambler.
Okay, he's a dirty, rotten cheat of a gambler. But he is a skilled fighter.
Yes.
And Jim Kelly's Williams is a martial artist who they served in Vietnam, and he practices his martial arts on racist cops.
Yeah.
At least in this movie.
Yes.
And so we get to see kind of their background. You know, they know each other. We kind of get a sense for who they are. Williams is very much about style. Roper is very much about the gambling bits. Lee is very much about just trying to stay off on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. End of Act 1. We have set up all of our characters. Well, I guess Act 1 really ends when we get to the island and we meet Han.
Yes.
You know, the bad guy there. So, Act 2. Everything's going well. The fighters are getting wined and dined. We meet the villain, you know, face to face. You know, Roper and Williams kind of have their talk about, does this seem really off? Like, this is no tournament I've ever seen. Later that night, the fighters are given kind of their choice of girls in probably the least well-aged scene of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. and Lee, he requests the girl who is actually a female spy. She tells him what's going on, and he does some reconnaissance. Williams also goes out, but not to do any reconnaissance. He's just going out to have some cigarettes and just to kind of enjoy the night air.
Mm-hmm.
That's important for what comes next. So, part four. The tournament begins. There's a bully on the boat. He fights. He loses because we need some villain to lose, like Toot Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a laughably, you know, innocuous one because it's too early for Han to show his hand.
Yes.
Also, we'll come back to.
Yes.
But we also get that Roper... The John Saxon, his gambling, how he does it. He fakes his incompetence to boost the odds so that when the odds are to his liking, then he can just go on out and fight.
Yep.
We also saw, because of Bruce Lee's nighttime shenanigans, the guards are punished. They have to fight Bolo Young, who is named Bolo. In they character naming schemes were not terribly. So here's my assumption. I have no idea of saying that this is real, right?
Yeah.
My assumption, this was the 1970s. They were using a mixed crew of American and Chinese, you know, crew members and so forth. And my guess is that they did not change many of the names so that they knew who they were talking about, no matter what the language.
I assume it's a Tony Danza situation. Every time he plays a character, it's named Tony. I could make assumptions about Mr. Danza. I can make assumptions about the writing. I'm not going to. It's just one of those things. You just...
Okay.
And then you move along.
All right. Anyway, Bolo kills all the guards, including one by holding him comfortingly too hard.
Yes.
And Bruce Lee gets to fight the henchman who killed his sister, and we get to see that very satisfying, you know, death scene there. All right. We're at the halfway point, and it seems like everything is going kind of according to plan. Lee is uncovering the bad stuff that's going on, you know, Roper Williams, they're winning their fights. Our two initial bad guys have been defeated. All is well and right with the world. Except this is not a two-act structure.
No.
This is a four-act structure. So now we get into... And these last two acts, they occur in like the last 40 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, we've taken an hour to set up this stuff. Now 40 minutes to rush to the end. After the tournament day, Williams, Jim Kelly's character, is invited back to Han. And Han's like, somebody beat up my guards and was out. And people say they saw you, so it had to have been you. Williams like, nah, man, ain't me. And Han responds by bludgeoning him to death but barehanded, really. That's when we find out that Han probably doesn't have a real hand.
Yeah, it appears to be stone or metal or something.
Mm-hmm. And so things are starting
to fall
apart.
Or really bad frostbite. I'm not sure.
Really bad frostbite.
Yeah.
Really bad. Except they in the next scene when Roper is being shown through the museum, there's the skeleton hand on display.
Yeah.
It's like, what's this? Oh, just another trophy.
Yeah.
So, one of our heroes is killed. John Saxon's character is invited by Han to now become, because he is clearly a very capable fighter, we want you on our side to work in this drug smuggling and slave trade. Because, you know, good fighters must be absent morals.
Yes.
Roper declines. And in what is really weird timing on it, that night, like, Bruce Lee's character goes out, you know, again, but this time to call for help using the radio and a Cobra.
Yes.
And getting into a great big fight. He does succeed in doing that, but then he's captured. So, last bits. Morning is dawned. It is the next day. And John Saxon's character Roper's given the choice. You can fight Bruce Lee, and then you'll be on our team, the bad guys' team, and we'll own you, but you'll be taken care of. Or you can fight Bolo, the guy who hugged a guy to death.
Yes.
So Roper declines fighting Bruce Lee because he's seen other movies. And instead fights Bolo, eventually managing to win. Which upsets Han enough, who thought that Bolo was undefeatable. And so says, all right, everybody, kill him. Beat him all up. It's at this point that the female spy that we haven't seen since Act 1.
Yeah.
Shows back up to let loose a whole bunch of prisoners who are still somehow in fighting trim.
Yes.
To go in, and there's just this great big old ninja fight scene.
Mm-hmm.
While Bruce Lee gets a chance to hunt down and confront the evil mastermind, Han, into the museum, into the mirror room, which I love that scene and hate it so much. but which ultimately ends with Lee's victory, because of course it does. It's that kind of movie. He comes out and we get a fatigued thumbs up between John Saxon and Bruce Lee.
Yep.
Credits as the helicopters of the, you know, the government people, you know, fly overhead.
Yep.
It's a silly movie. But each scene plays into the next. The screenplay treatment for this was really, really short. So most movies run about 120 pages.
Mm-hmm.
This one, 60. So lots of, how to put it here, lots of establishing shots, lots of, you know,
yeah,
in terms of the script. And from what I understand in the script, because Bruce Lee did all of the, fight choreography for this, right? Is that the script would just say during a fight scene is like, Mr. Lee will.
Nice.
Talk to me about your experience of this silly, silly movie.
So, I have two parts that I want to cover in a four-act... no, so, removing all of the glaring plot holes...
Oh, and there are many.
There are many. This was a fun movie. I enjoyed it. I especially loved the fighting scenes. I had only seen snippets of Bruce Lee in the past. I'd never actually seen a complete fighting scene with him. And so this was a treat. I really enjoyed it. The overall story was good. I enjoyed the cinematography and the establishing shots and whatever. It's very much a period piece. It's that 70s vibe kind of film. But if that's what you're in the mood for, they do it well. To jump straight to the end, I recommend it. Absolutely watch it for multiple reasons. One, it's a historic film. It's Bruce Lee. If you've never seen his stuff, it's worth a watch. And then I started going back and thinking about it. I'm like, this doesn't make a lot of sense. It's like, okay. I'm going to assume the English government wants Lee to go there because it was a British gentleman that showed up. And he shows up again later and he's very British and in his mannerisms and nature. So clearly England wants somebody to go to this island.
Yep. And also his name is Braithwaite.
Braithwaite, yes. Braithwaite. Okay, fine. We don't know why England is involved in this, but sure, whatever. Drugs, sure, fine, whatever. I feel that the issue with the sister was kind of we need to give him a little bit more motivation to go. So we're going to add this in here.
It also gives him the kind of the emotional closure from that very beginning, you know. Emotional content.
Yes, emotional content. But it seemed like the roles in the movie were a little off because Hans, number one, didn't seem to be his number one. It was Bolo that seemed to be the predominant right-hand man. Whereas this other guy, Scarface McGee, whose name I don't remember, seemed to be like number two.
O'Hara.
Yeah, thank you, O'Hara. And so O'Hara being in the tournament as Han's number one didn't seem to fit. It's like, no, you don't put your number one in the tournament. He's there. He's by your side for a reason. And if O'Hara really was his number one, he would not have lost his cool towards the end. So it's just like, eh, okay, fine, whatever. Vengeance has been served, fine.
Fun fact, they approached Chuck Norris for that role. And Chuck Norris declined, saying getting beat up by Bruce Lee once was enough for any actor.
Then there's Williams.
Yes.
There seemed to be no real rhyme or reason as to why he was there. Lee was there to ultimately avenge his sister.
Mm-hmm.
What was the other guy's name?
Roper.
Roper, thank you. I wanted to say Rolo for a second, but that's a candy. Roper. I'm hungry. Roper was there because of massive gambling debts that they set up.
Mm-hmm.
Williams... when we meet him, when they do his flashback, he has his tickets for Hong Kong. He is ready to go. He runs into a couple of racist cops. He kicks their butt, steals their car. Is that... Was he already going to be in the tournament to begin with? What... There's... That, to me, that whole flashback seemed like, oh, we have to put something here. We have to pad this out another 10 minutes.
Well, I think that was supposed to be part of that, the high-profile martial arts tournament, the idea that everyone there is invited.
Yeah.
And when it came to Lee, Lee's invitation was probably forged.
Probably, yeah. And that's all well and good. But it going back to Williams, it's just like, they didn't really give him any...
They did not.
Any real substance to his character in terms of backstory.
He
is against racism. Yeah, he is against racism.
Yeah, we're going to circle back to this.
Okay. And it just, a lot of it seemed like, a lot of the scenes seemed afterthoughts in terms of production and writing. Because there's just some big glaring things there. But you, if you step back and realize that it's not that deep of a movie, you're not there to watch this intricate story with thespian, Shakespearean-esque actors. It's a kung fu movie. And a very good one.
This is one of those movies. I would liken it a bit to like the Godzilla movies.
Oh, absolutely.
You're watching this for the big monster.
Yes.
You know, there's other story there.
Mm-hmm.
And usually pretty decent acting around it.
Yeah.
But we're there to see the big monster. In this case, the big monster being kung fu fighting. Yeah.
Well, the big monster being Bruce Lee.
Yes. So, we're going to circle back to Jim Kelly and John Saxon.
Yeah.
John Saxon didn't want to do it. You know, he wasn't terribly interested in doing this. But they needed a white actor because they did not trust that an Asian actor could carry the movie.
Mm.
It's the 1970s, and Vietnam is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, Roper was supposed to die. Basically, Williams and Roper were swapped.
Aha.
And so what you would have had was you would have had the motivation for Roper, you know, the gambling debts and so forth, and he would have been killed. And that would have left Jim Kelly, you know, the guy who doesn't really have much motivation, but then he gets to be a survivor to it.
Yeah. That probably would have made a little bit more sense.
Now, that being said, 1972-73, this is, it's kind of a love letter to diversity in the...
Yeah.
In terms of our main leads here, you know, this is a movie that is still being parodied. It is still being referenced. I'm pretty sure that I saw a goof of this in Pink Panther Strikes Again. You know, just kind of referenced in different ways because that came out like 3 years later.
Yeah.
But it's also Balls of Fury, which is a Christopher Walken ping pong, you know. I would be surprised if Simpsons hasn't done it twice.
Oh, probably.
So, it is absolutely a worthwhile film to see at least once.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
I think that watching it on repeat requires a special kind of dedication. But I hadn't seen this movie in probably a decade.
Yeah.
And that was well within the time frame of saying, you know what? I want to watch Kung Fu movie again. Let's watch one of the best ones.
Yeah. It's a once a decade kind of movie.
A once a decade. It's kind of, to me, it's like Bloodsport, the original Bloodsport, which I don't know if you've seen that one. It's a Jean-Claude Van Damme martial arts tournament thing with the Kumite.
Yeah.
You know, but this became the foundation basically for Tekken and Street Fighter.
Yeah.
And, you know, so on and so forth. Mortal Kombat borrows pretty heavily from these different things.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do a tournament. We're going to bring about worldwide class of different actors of different backgrounds, and we'll just see how things go. So Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did, yes.
I don't have anything else to say. Do you have anything else to say?
I think it's my turn.
It will be your turn. For those of you who don't listen to the rest of the podcast, shame on you. But also, don't forget Extra Life Marathon. The link's on the website, ekpodcast.com. Check it out.
Yep.
Hello, meet Popsicles. Why don't you grab your multipass, a drink, and come sit with us?
Let's pick each other's brain. We want you to be part of our intimate conversation about science fiction topics.
Let's do this. Join us, and let's talk about science fiction topics in books, movies, TV shows, and games.
At Science Fiction Remnant, you are invited to listen in.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And don't forget your multipass.